Pockets had built a pair of snowmen off to one side. The fountain was a simple octagon of gray stone about hip high and filled with ice. He wanted to draw his pistol, but there was no threat visible and he doubted it would be much use against anything they might encounter. Tara strode over to the fountain, her chanting rising in volume as she worked her way around it. She examined the sides and top before making a mystical pass that evaporated the ice to allow a better view inside the bowl. Finally, she fell silent and turned to face him. "This place is a bust. There's not even a hint of magic." Lynn shrugged. It was too much to hope they'd hit it on the first try. "Shall we head to the next one?" They had barely gotten in the car when Tara's phone rang. "Claire?" "You did?" "We're on our way." "What is it?" Lynn fired up the car and cranked the heater. "They found one of the boxes. Claire says it's warded six ways from Sunday and her magic can't touch it. She wants me to come over and lend a hand. What's the address?" Tara spotted Claire and Adam outside the door of an abandoned building. The sign over the door said, "For sale by owner," but there was no name or number written on it. The derelict building sat between an apartment complex and a mini-mart. A trickle of people eyed the unusual pair loitering around the old building as they made their way up and down the street, but no one took the time to talk. Lynn pulled in behind Claire and Adam's car, and they climbed out. Tara marched straight over to Claire. "What did you find?"
"You had best have a look yourself."
Tara followed her inside. Beyond the door was a large open space covered in graffiti and littered with cigarette butts and empty beer bottles. It looked like the local youth used the place as a hangout. If they couldn't do something about the box, they'd have to make sure no one entered the building. Claire pointed to a spot on the wall near the ceiling. Tara slipped on her glasses.
"Reveal."
A section of the wall shimmered in her enhanced vision and revealed a cutout. A wooden crate sat below the opening. When she climbed up for a better look, Tara flinched. A web of dark magic filled the space, the black box barely visible through all the threads.
"Not screwing around, is she?" Tara asked as she climbed back down. "No. I cast my best breaking spell and it didn't even draw a twitch from the wards. Even together, I doubt we'd penetrate it."
"I agree, and even if we did, we couldn't open the box itself."
"So, what do we do?"
Claire sounded nervous, and Tara didn't blame her. Despite the evidence, it was hard to square what they knew of Mercia from her time at the department with what she'd accomplished here. "We need to set up stakeouts at all five locations. If Mercia comes to check on her handiwork, they could potentially follow her back to wherever she's hiding out."
"That's a pretty thin plan. She can trigger the spells from anywhere, and whatever else she is, Mercia isn't an idiot. No way she'd do anything to compromise her hiding places or headquarters."
"All true." Tara ran a hand through her hair. "Maybe we should just cordon off the place to keep the locals out. I doubt anyone would bother this box given its location and the illusion hiding it. But if they got to partying and smashing stuff, you never know what might happen."
"What do you think? An aversion ward around the building? That should keep any non-wizards out of the area, and if it's broken, it will give us warning that something was happening."
"Good call. Can you handle it? I want to try and figure out where the remaining boxes are most likely hidden."
"No sweat."
Claire limbered up her fingers. Tara left Claire to her casting and walked out of the building. Adam and Lynn stood on either side of the door, hands thrust into pockets and steam coming out of their mouths. The poor guys were way out of their depths, and she felt bad reducing them to chauffeurs and bodyguards. Not bad enough to send them home. It was pretty handy to have someone good with a gun if they should run into any of the more corporeal undead.
"So what's the deal?" Lynn asked. "Can you two handle it or not?"
"Definitely not. Claire's going to fix it so the local kids can't go in there anymore. Let's see if we can figure out where the other four are hiding. I'm up for anything that gets me out of this cold." While Lynn started the car and cranked up the heat, Tara turned to Adam. "She won't be long if you want to wait in your car." Adam shook his head.
"I'll guard the door until she comes out. How are we going to resolve this crisis, Tara?"
Tara offered a tired smile. "When I figure that out, you'll be one of the first to know." Adam grunted. Tara climbed into the car beside Lynn, who already had his computer open and the map on the screen. He highlighted their current location and marked it number one.
"Now what?"
Eliminate anything further from this point than the diameter of the island. Lin typed, and over half the remaining points vanished.
Terra studied them.
It didn't take long, using the one position they'd confirmed as a starting point, to find the four points that completed a pentagram. She pointed them out one by one, and Lin highlighted them.
It seems so simple now, he said.
Getting rid of 90% of the false locations helped a lot. Claire tapped on the window, and she rolled it down.
All done?
Yep. Anyone getting too close will have an overwhelming urge to puke their guts out. That ought to convince them to party somewhere else. How about you?
Lin turned the laptop to show Claire what they'd discovered.
Standard pentagram layout. Nice.
You want to ward the other four like I did this one?
Terra nodded. For now, that's all we can do. Which ones do you want?
Claire shrugged, so Terra gave her the two closest, a church and a funeral home.
Shouldn't take more than an hour or two. We'll have to update the chief when we're finished.
Terra sighed. Yes, he's not going to be thrilled with our results.
I'm not thrilled with our results.
Terra couldn't argue with that.
Well, the clue was right, Lin said as he pulled the car off the access road and parked beside a chain-link fence. It's certainly dark and wet.
They were approaching the location of the final box, a culvert 7 feet in diameter that directed storm runoff to the ocean. This was the one he was looking forward to the least. He'd fished more than one body out of these drains over his years on the force.
Lin slid out of the car and shivered.
Sunset wasn't for another 2 hours, but the temperature was dropping already. He walked around the car and joined Terra beside a gate in the fence. It had a padlock, of course, but a wave of Terra's hand combined with a muttered command popped it open in a jiffy. It was a short walk from the gate to the culvert. A wide concrete gully funneled water from all over the city to this drain. More than one person had drowned over the years when they were caught in a flash flood. One good thing about doing this in the winter was they didn't have to worry about a flood. Pneumonia, on the other hand, seemed a distinct possibility.
How about sharing a little magical heat over here?
Terra glanced at him like she'd forgotten he was even there.
Sorry.
She put her hand on his back, and warmth flooded through him, drawing a long sigh.
Thanks.
No problem. Let's get moving. We don't want to do this after dark.
No, but we have over an hour of daylight, and we don't want to slip and break our necks.
The warning proved apt. You could hardly take a step across the snow-covered concrete without hitting a hidden patch of ice. Lin feared he really would break his neck before they reached the culvert. An iron ladder hammered into the stone granted access to the drainage gully. Lin eyed it and frowned. The black opening of the culvert gave off a bad vibe.
I don't suppose you can ward it from here.
Afraid not. First we have to confirm the box is actually down there. Just because we got the other locations right is no guarantee on this one.
Come on.
We have to be sure. If it makes you feel better, I'll hold your hand when we reach the dark part. She whistled and hopped off the edge of the gully. Terra drifted like a leaf in a breeze to the icy floor.
Must be nice.
He crawled down the ladder, testing each rung as he went. When he reached the bottom, his hands ached from the tight grip he'd held on the freezing rungs.
Shit! I left my flashlight in the car.
Terra hissed and waved a hand. A handful of fire orbs flashed into being.
I think we can manage with these.
She gestured, and the balls of flame flew into the culvert opening. Icicles hung from the top, and a foot-wide path of brown ice ran down the center. He really didn't want to know what was mixed with that water. At least the cold held down the stink. He blew out a breath and marched toward the opening, determined to complete the job as quickly as possible. He'd barely taken 3 steps when Terra grabbed his arm.
What?
Something's not right. The dark magic feels different here. Less contained. Lin reached for his pistol, taking his time, waiting for her to reassure him that it wouldn't be necessary. Terra remained silent, her focus on the still-hidden recesses of the culvert. That told him all he needed to know about the seriousness of the situation. The flaming orbs drifted deeper into the culvert. He caught a glimpse of pasty white skin and yellow teeth. Then the moans rang out.
"Aim for the head," Terra said. "I need to stop the overflow of energy, so you'll have to deal with the zombies."
"Right." He worked the slide, putting a bullet in the chamber. Terra whistled and flew up into the leaden sky.
Hey!
Draw them away from the entrance so I can get inside. You'll be fine. Zombies are slow.
Great, he muttered. Zombies are slow. That's a big piece of wisdom.
The first of the undead shambled out of the culvert and into the light. It was an ugly thing. Most of its face had been eaten by rats. Where there had once been eyes, there were only black pits. Lynn drew a bead on its head, then lowered his weapon. She wanted them away from the opening, so dropping the first one a step away from it wasn't the best plan. He waved his arms.
Hey, you ugly fucks! Come and get me!
The lead zombie oriented on him and picked up the pace, speeding up to a quick walk. Lynn backpedaled, maintaining the distance between them. One after another, walking corpses emerged from the culvert until five of the hideous things were chasing him in a slow-motion race. When they were 100 feet up the gully, he put a bullet in the forehead of the closest zombie. It collapsed like a puppet with its strings cut. But only for a moment. The zombie sat up, and the hole in its head closed as he stared in horror. This was going to be harder than he thought. When the first zombie Lynn shot sat back up, Terra stared in disbelief. When he dropped a second one and it climbed to its feet again, she knew she had to hurry. They were far enough up the gully now that she could land without fear. She conjured more flaming spheres and surrounded herself with a light magic barrier. With her defenses in place, she landed and eased her way into the culvert. Behind her, more shots rang out. The zombies were drawing power from the energies of the box and using it to heal wounds that should have destroyed them. Until she sealed that leak, Lynn couldn't defeat them. Terra positioned her flame spheres every 10 feet as she made her way deeper into the cold darkness. There was really nowhere to hide anything in the culvert. It was just a metal tube with no shelves or hollow walls. She couldn't imagine Mercia simply tossing the box on the ground. A flood would wash it out into the ocean. Something moved at the edge of her light. She pointed, and a flame sphere flew toward it.
Ugh!
She gagged and put her hand over her mouth and nose. A lumpen mass of flesh sat off to one side of the culvert. Pale, putrefied, and covered in bristly hair, once upon a time it might have been a pig. Deep, slowly regenerating gouges covered the thing. In the center of the mass sat the box. Disgusting as it was, all she needed to do was conjure a sealing circle around the mass. That should weaken the zombies enough for Lynn to finish them off.
Mine,
a guttural, inhuman voice said. From behind the mass, an emaciated, hunched-over figure emerged. It had an elongated jaw filled with enough teeth to do a shark proud. A foot-long, slime-covered tongue flicked from side to side. The ghoul ripped a hunk of flesh from the lump with a taloned hand and stuffed it into its dripping mouth.
Mine,
it said as it slunk closer. Terra threw a hand out. Flames of destruction incinerate my enemy. Fire blast. A searing jet of flame shot out. The ghoul lunged to one side, faster than she expected. The stink of seared flesh indicated that she hadn't missed altogether. It circled around her, forcing Terra to spin to keep it in sight. Fire blast! It dodged a second jet of flames, then a third. It was too quick for such an imprecise spell. She switched to wind magic. Father of winds, lend this unworthy fire wizard the gift of your protection. Tornado trap! A small tornado lifted the ghoul up and smashed it into the top of the culvert, pinning it in place. She raised a hand. Now that she had it trapped, she couldn't miss. Something snaked around her ankle and yanked her off her feet. The impact broke her concentration, and the ghoul fell to the floor. A fleshy tentacle from the pile of ghoul food had her by the ankle. The light barrier kept it from hurting her, but it was pulling her closer. Behind her, the ghoul's talons scrabbled against steel as it climbed to its feet. Terra pointed at the tentacle and hissed. A dart of flame severed it 6 inches from her foot. She rolled over, cupped her hands, and chanted, "Flood the world with flames! Fire surge!" A river of flames gushed from her hands and roared into the ghoul's mouth. Its head exploded in a shower of gore. She sighed and climbed to her feet. More shots rang out. Right. Lynn was counting on her. A piece of the ghoul's skull had landed on her shoe. It slid off and worked its way toward the unmoving body. Other pieces were doing the same. Even with its head completely destroyed, the ghoul was trying to heal. She needed to focus. At the rate it was recovering, she had maybe 5 minutes to complete the sealing spell. That should be plenty, hopefully. Tara raised her hands and began to chant in Angelic. Seal the darkness. Bind the evil. Glowing runes appeared one after another around the flesh heap. She chanted the phrase over and over as she circled the fleshy mass and drew runes with her fingers. It extruded more pseudopods and sent one flying at her. Tara stepped to the side and kept casting. She couldn't break her rhythm or the warding would fail and she'd have to start over. She crouched down to avoid another attack. The circle was halfway complete. 2 tentacles shot at her this time. Tara dodged one and took a grazing blow to the ribs from the other. She ignored the pain and kept going. 4 tentacles formed. No way to dodge all those and continue the spell. She had to finish first. Tara picked up the pace of her casting, risking a mistaken enunciation. The last syllable fell from her lips a moment before the first tentacle shot out. It slammed into her barrier, but failed to smash through. Good. She turned to the ghoul and found the remaining pieces of its broken skull had stopped moving. Shots rang out in quick succession. Then there was silence. Tara stumbled toward the entrance to the culvert. Lynn still needed her. She stepped into the fading sunlight. Lynn was walking toward her, tucking his pistol back into a shoulder holster. He was okay. Thank God. So after I finished warding the culvert, Lynn called the police to retrieve the bodies and we came straight back here. Tara finished her report, leaving Orin with a pounding headache. He'd been sitting in his office all day, drinking coffee and waiting for news. Now that he had the news, the waiting didn't seem so bad. At least Tara and Lynn hadn't been seriously injured in the confrontation. Claire had given her report half an hour ago. She and Adam hadn't run into any monsters, but neither of his wizards had been remotely successful in dealing with the actual problem. He shouldn't have been surprised, given how ineffective they'd been with the first box, but it was still a disappointment.
So, what do you suggest we do about it? Your words won't stop Mircea from activating the artifacts when the island returns, will they?
No, they're very simple defenses designed to keep ordinary citizens from wandering into a dangerous location. Tara slumped in her chair. We need to call him back. There's simply no other option.
You realize how it looks. The Department of Magic having to rely on a first-year academy student to solve our problems for us?
It looks terrible. But given the alternative, she shrugged. There it was. That simple, exhausted shrug spoke volumes. However much Orin would have liked to spare Conryu any more trouble, he had no choice. With the northern incursion stretching their wizards thin, he had to rely on the assets available.
Do you think we could wrap it up in a day?
With Conryu's power, he could break the wards in an afternoon, but that assumes no traps are activated when he does. I have no certainties to offer you save one. If we do nothing, on June 25th the city will be flooded with nether spirits, enough that it will probably take every wizard the department can muster to destroy them all. And even then I'd expect massive casualties.
I'll call Dean Blaine and make the arrangements. If we can bring him in Sunday morning and get him back before classes on Monday, no one will even need to know about the threat. The last thing we need is to start a panic.
Chaos on Sunday. Another Sunday had rolled around, once more forcing Conryu to make the walk to Angus's dinky office to check in. Conryu's mind was a million miles away. Who would have thought it would be so difficult to find an engine? Everyone he asked turned him down. Over and over, the same thing. It was against the no-technology rule. He wanted to turn it into a magic item, but that didn't do much to convince them, and looked like his experiment was going to end before it began. Sonya would be so disappointed. She'd really been looking forward to the project. So would he, for that matter. He really hoped the professor didn't feel the need to share any more of his life story. He didn't have the patience for it today. Conryu adjusted his grip on the Scholomantic. Despite another 2 weeks of practice, he still hadn't managed to summon Prime through a portal yet. Mrs. Umbra assured him that it was the most complex thing he'd attempted so far, and he shouldn't be disappointed if he couldn't master it right away. He frowned when he reached Angus's office. The door was closed tight. Usually he left it open until Conryu arrived. Conryu's knock was met with a quick, "Come in!" He pushed the door open and stuck his head in. Dean Blaine was sitting in his chair.
"Get in here and shut the door," she said.
He complied at once, shutting the door tight.
"What?"
She pressed a finger to her lips. When he fell silent, she cast a spell in the whispery language of the wind.
"Okay, we can talk now.
What's going on?" Dean Blaine took a breath, but Angus cleared his throat before she spoke.
"Fine, you tell him."
"Thank you."
Angus smoothed the front of his tweed jacket.
"I have a message from Chief Kane. You're needed back in Sentinel City. The rest of the boxes have been located, and you're the only one strong enough to break the wards protecting them. Isn't this wonderful? People are already starting to recognize how special you are."
Conryu resisted the almost overwhelming urge to punch Angus in the face and turned to Dean Blaine. She shook her head.
"There's no one else. Don't worry, it'll be a quick trip. You'll be back before classes on Monday."
"How? The train ride there and back takes most of a day."
"You'll only be taking the train as far as Central. From there you'll go the rest of the way by Dark Portal. We receive regular deliveries, so it won't seem strange for the train to come and go an extra time today."
"Well, maybe I can arrange to have an engine delivered while I'm out. That way the day won't be a total loss."
"I got word you were trying to find one. What's that about?"
Conryu explained, and when he finished, she grinned.
"That's about the most impractical thing I've ever heard. Technically it violates the no technology rule, but I'll grant you an exemption since you're conducting a magical experiment. It'll be interesting to see if you can make it work. More importantly, it makes a perfect cover for your outing. So let's go. Time's a-wasting.
I can't just disappear without telling Maria and the club. They're all expecting me."
"I'll tell everyone what they need to know."
Dean Blaine stood up. They were almost pressed together in the small space.
"All you need to focus on is your mission. I'll walk you to the train."
"Good luck, my boy."
Angus was positively beaming at him. At least someone was excited. Regardless of his wishes to the contrary, it seemed he was getting drawn deeper and deeper into the magical world. Mr. Kane had told him last summer the government regarded him as a valuable resource. They certainly weren't shy about using him. At least it was to help his hometown. If they'd asked him to go to Northport or Santa Angeles on the West Coast, he might have complained more. Not that it would have probably done much good. He followed Dean Blaine out of Angus's office and down the hall.
"Don't say anything about the mission outside of a boarded room. There's no way to know who might be listening. I've assured our privacy in case you have any more questions. Listen to Terra, and don't do anything they don't ask you to do."
"Don't worry about that. The last thing I want to do is more than necessary. Do you have any idea how long I'm going to be on call?"
"You're what, 18? Given an average lifespan..."
Okay, I get it." He followed Dean Blaine down some back halls he didn't even know existed until they emerged from a small side door. She whispered something, and a chill settled over him. The next thing he knew, they were flying.
"Jesus!"
They went just high enough to clear the trees before landing on the train platform. Today, only the engine and a single car waited on the tracks. The door was open, and inside were piles of crates, sacks, and a bunch of shelves.
"Looks comfy." "It's only half an hour. The train doesn't go to the station, but a warehouse. A department car will meet you there. Good luck."
He stepped into the train, and before he knew it, they were moving. Maria paced just inside the main doors of the lecture hall. Everyone else was busy with their clubs or studying, so she had the large foyer to herself. Conryu was late again. That was getting to be a habit. She hoped the professor wasn't telling him more of his life's story. Conryu was one of the more patient and gentle people she knew, but even he had his breaking point. Speaking of breaking points, Maria was approaching her own with Mrs. Illustrial. Her light magic teacher wouldn't look at her, much less acknowledge her questions in class. If there was a point she didn't understand, she was out of luck. It didn't seem like a very professional attitude, but when ego was involved, sometimes nothing else mattered.
Maria?
Dean Blaine approached at a quick walk. A queasy feeling settled in Maria's stomach.
Have you seen Conryu? As a matter of fact, I have.
Oh?
Please let him be okay.
The dean muttered a spell.
He had to return to the city. An emergency came up and your father needed him for another breaking.
Oh, God. Is it something dangerous?
Not at all. It's just the magic involved is a little more than the wizards at the department can handle. Don't worry. He'll be back by Monday.
She forced herself to take slow breaths. Dad wouldn't put Conryu in danger.
Thanks for telling me. I should probably get to my alchemy club.
Actually,
Dean Blaine moved to block her when she took a step.
There's something I need you to do for me. While Conryu's task isn't dangerous, it is something we want kept quiet. I need you to take a message to the girls in his club. If I do it, they might grow suspicious.
Of course.
If they were asking for favors, this might be a good chance to get Mrs. Illustrial to straighten up her act. Maria hated dragging someone else into her problems, but there was nothing she could do on her own.
Maybe you could help me with something as well.
Like what?
Maria told her what was happening in her class.
I was hoping I could switch teachers.
Dean Blaine frowned.
All the other light magic teachers have other classes. I'll have a talk with Mrs. Illustrial. I assure you, when Monday rolls around, you'll have no further problems from her.
Maria shivered at the dean's cold tone. She wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of a lecture from the dean, not when she was in that mood.
So what did you want me to tell Conryu's club? Tell them he's gone to Central to arrange an engine and that he won't be back until late.
She gave Maria directions to the club's shed, and they parted ways. She left the lecture hall and trudged across the campus to the ragged little shack sitting right at the edge of the woods. Steam rose from the roof, and all the snow was melted in a 10-yard circle around it. The promise of heat quickened her pace. Maria knocked on the door, and it slid open, revealing Sonya and Crystal.
Conryu?
Sonya sounded far too eager.
Oh, Maria, right? He's not here. I know. Conryu asked me to bring you a message. Dean Blaine gave him permission to go to Central to pick up an engine for your project. She's suspending the rules and calling it a magical experiment.
Sonya grinned.
It's about time. I was starting to wonder if this job was ever going to begin. How come he didn't tell us himself?
Maria's heart raced. She hated lying. It was a spur-of-the-moment thing, and he had to rush to catch the train. He won't be back until late tonight.
Huh.
Sonya looked up at Crystal.
Guess there's nothing to do today. Want to go to the cafeteria and have an ice cream?
Sure.
Sonya returned her attention to Maria.
You can join us if you'd like.
No, thank you. I have to get to the alchemy club.
She fled before she had to answer any more questions. It seemed like they'd barely gotten moving when the train began to slow down again. Conryu held onto the shelves until the final lurch. The door slid open at once, and a middle-aged woman in a gray robe glared up at him.
Well, come on, then.
She moved to one side, and he hopped down. 10 yards from the track was the biggest warehouse he'd ever seen. The black sedan parked next to it looked like a toy. The Department of Magic's pentagram logo was painted on the side of both car and warehouse. The wizard marched toward it, and he fell in step behind her.
Not much for chit-chat, these department wizards.
This one was every bit as friendly as the one that tested him. She pointed at the back seat door and climbed in behind the wheel. He hadn't even gotten his seatbelt fastened when she stomped on the accelerator and they went screeching out of the lot. The buckle finally clicked into place, and not a minute too soon the way his chauffeur drove. At least the soft leather of the seat was more comfortable than the sack of onions he sat on during the train ride.
So is it safe to talk in here?
Conryu asked.
Yep.
She swerved around a dump truck. Zipped past it and pulled back in front.
Do you know any more about what's happening?
Nope.
She stepped harder on the gas. Conryu got a glimpse of the speedometer as it crept past 80.
Did you by any chance ever drive a race car?
And that drew a laugh. Boss wants you at HQ double quick. When the boss says jump, you by God better jump.
Who's the boss?
She looked at him in the rearview mirror.
You kidding?
No, ma'am. Everything in this business is new to me. I assume you're talking about the Central Station Chief?
Not just the Central Chief. Malice Kincaid is the head of the whole department.
She answers only to the president, and some say he answers to her, at least on magical matters.
Kincaid. You mean the famous Kincaids?
If it has to do with magic, they're the only Kincaids. Malice turned the business over to her middle daughter 10 years ago when she took over the department. I'm not the least ashamed to admit she scares the shit out of me.
The department wizard fell silent after that. Kanryu looked out the window at the central city skyline. The various designs looked even more impressive up close. One in particular drew his eye, a black, cylindrical skyscraper maybe 40 stories high. A 10-story pentagram was engraved in the glass. Talk about an intimidating building. 10 minutes later, they were parked in a connected garage. Kanryu scrambled out, relieved to have made it in one piece, and followed his guide through a set of automatic double doors. Inside, the halls were gray and undecorated. Not so much as a single piece of art cluttered the walls. They stopped in front of a bank of elevators, and she pressed the call button.
So what's with the book?
Kanryu glanced down at Prime.
It has some notes Dean Blaine thought might be useful.
The Scholomantic sent its annoyance through their link, but the wizard appeared to accept his explanation. The elevator chimed, and the doors slid open. She motioned Kanryu in first, then followed. The control panel had 4 basement levels and 38 above-ground levels. The department wizard waved her hand in front of the panel and spoke a short phrase. It wasn't infernal, so he didn't know what she said. A basement level 5 button appeared, and she pushed it. She caught him staring and grinned. We don't want just anyone to have access to the portal chambers. The ride down took less than a minute. The doors opened on a long corridor. She motioned him out.
Just follow the hall to the central chamber, then go through the black door. The boss is waiting for you.
Kanryu stepped out, and the door shut behind him. He blew out a sigh and started down the empty hall. Stupid wizards and their creepy hangouts. It felt like at least 100 yards before the hall opened into a round chamber with 6 doors, one for each element. The black door wasn't even like a painted black. It was more like the absence of all light, and Kanryu found he didn't want to touch it.
"Don't be such a coward," Prime muttered around his arm.
"Be quiet. No one's supposed to know about you."
The door didn't have a handle, so Kanryu reached out to give it a shove. When his fingers were 6 inches away, a burst of dark energy leapt from his hand to the door. It didn't so much swing open as fade away. Inside was an almost empty room with a circle carved into the stone floor nearly identical to the one from his awakening. Standing beside it was a woman in gray robes. Her white hair pulled up into a severe bun. She held her hands clasped behind her back and stared at him with green eyes as hard as gems. Her wrinkles weren't quite as deep as Mrs. Umbra's, but it was a near thing.
Kanryu Koda.
He nodded and stepped into the room. His instincts said not to show this one any fear. If she caught so much as a hint of weakness, he was doomed.
Malice Kincaid. Nice to meet you. Your granddaughter's in my class.
I know. I know everything about you. I haven't decided whether you're the greatest threat this world has ever known. It's best hope for the future, or both.
Kanryu cocked his head.
Why would I be either? I have no ambitions beyond a hope, a vain one it seems, to live a quiet life.
As long as the world leaves me alone, I'm content to return the favor.
A man without ambition. How unusual. Perhaps you'll grow into it, or maybe you'll be manipulated into serving the ambitions of others. Whatever the case, know this. If you become a threat, I'll see you dead.
Great. Maybe next time you people need some breaking done, you should call someone else. You think I can't find a better way to spend my Sunday? And by the way, you should be nicer to Kelsey. She's a sweetheart, and you and her mother both seem to stress her out. She's doing her best.
Her best isn't good enough. She's a Kincaid.
Kanryu waited for more, but Malice seemed to consider that all the explanation required, and in her mind maybe it was.
In any case, Malice continued, it's no concern of yours.
You're wrong. Kelsey's my friend, and I don't wish to see her in pain.
Malice glared at him, and he glared right back.
Conry refused to let the vicious old woman intimidate him. She finally looked away and moved closer to the circle.
Enough of this useless banter. You have a task to perform. The circle will carry you to the border of hell. Call Cerberus and ride him to the end of the path. You'll emerge in the Sentinel City Department's portal chamber.
Conryu held up his forearm. What's to stop Lucifer and the Dark Lady from interfering?
The path is warded against demons. Cerberus will only be able to enter because of your connection. Now go.
Conryu stepped into the circle. Malice took a clear crystal key on a thong out from around her neck and touched the edge of the circle. Everything went black. He blinked, and once again found himself a step from hell. Conryu looked around at vast amounts of nothing and sighed. It would be okay with him if he never had to come back here.
Cerberus!
A pool of darkness gathered beside him, and in moments the demon dog formed a body half again as big as a horse. All three heads panted, their tongues hanging out. The center head leaned down and licked him.
Good to see you two. Crouch down so I can climb on, please.
Cerberus lay down on his belly, and Conryu leapt up onto his broad back. We'd best be on our way before any unwelcome guests arrive. Cerberus whined, and his body trembled under Conryu.
What is it?
Back again, mortal, a familiar, deep voice said.
Lucifer emerged from the endless darkness, the demon shining with his own inner light. He held the massive trident over one shoulder like Paul Bunyan with his axe. Conryu didn't want to get into a discussion with the demon.
I'm just passing through. Come on, Cerberus.
The demon dog set out at a trot that soon accelerated into a full run. Lucifer kept pace easily.
No need to rush off, boy.
Conryu ignored him, drawing a rumbling growl from Lucifer. The trident rose and plunged down at them. Conryu flinched, but it struck an invisible barrier a foot above his head. He blew out a sigh. Malice hadn't lied about the ward, anyway. Lucifer hammered the barrier several more times with equally futile results.
The Department of Magic's wards are as impressive as always. Wouldn't you prefer to make a contract with me rather than that puppy?
Cerberus's left-hand head growled, but Lucifer ignored it. Conryu ignored the demon's looming presence. It felt like they were covering vast distances with each stride. Hopefully they would reach the exit soon.
Come now, be reasonable. If I were to contract with you, I could lend you a portion of my power. Strong as you are now, teamed with me you'd be invincible. You can't ask for more than that.
Conryu finally looked at Lucifer. Until you decide to betray me? I've been warned about your nature. You aren't christened the Prince of Lies for nothing. I don't trust you, and I can't very well team up with someone I don't trust. Cerberus has proven himself a loyal partner, and that's worth more than raw power. Up ahead, a light appeared. That had to be the exit gate.
Deny me, boy, and hell will never be a safe place for you. Every time you enter, I'll be waiting. One of these days you'll make a mistake, and when you do, I'll rip the screaming soul from your body and drag it down to the darkest pit I can find.
With that final threat, Lucifer vanished. Cerberus's right head looked back at him and whined.
Yeah, he's a real charmer. Don't worry, we'll be extra careful.
Cerberus came to a stop 6 feet from the disk of light and lay down to let Conryu climb off his back. He patted the demon dog on his flank.
Thanks for the ride.
Conryu stepped into the light and left hell behind. Lady Raven reclined on the soft velvet of her couch and sighed. In the 5 months since she'd been forced to abandon two of her identities, she turned her lair. She smiled to herself. Calling the place a lair made her sound like a witch in a storybook.
Hideout, perhaps?
No, that carried a sort of gangster feel. Redoubt, perhaps? That had a properly secure sound to it. She turned her head to regard Iron Skull's reanimated body. It stood silently against the stone wall. What do you think? Shall we call this our redoubt?
Of course, the faceless one occupying the body was incapable of responding. It simply stared straight ahead with its empty black gaze. Though powerful and obedient, her new servants weren't much for company. 6 more months, and she could leave her dingy temporary home for a place befitting a newly risen hierarch. She'd sensed it when the weakling department wizards approached her hidden boxes, along with their feeble attempts to dispel her wards. They were both pathetic, but she gave them credit for at least hunting the boxes down. She'd harbored doubts that they were capable of that much. Thera and Claire had even been kind enough to add an extra layer of protection to her hiding places. How frustrating it must be for the department to know the locations and still be totally powerless to do anything. She almost laughed aloud, but instead sighed. She should summon a familiar to share her victory with. It was terribly unsatisfying having no one but undead to whom she could gloat. The familiar tug from her mask drew Lady Raven's attention to the end table in the corner of her lounge. It wasn't time for the monthly report. She'd just spoken to her superiors last week. She rolled off her couch, walked over, and grabbed the mask. What did they want? A door in the left-hand wall led to her new casting chamber. She entered and sealed it behind her. When she reached the casting circle in the center of the room, she cleared her mind and slipped the mask on. Lady Raven was instantly taken to the meeting place where she found only Lady Wolf waiting. She'd never been summoned by less than the full group.
Hierarch? Your hiding places are compromised. The boxes must be moved at once. As I said last week, the department wizards are powerless to damage my wards. I assure you the artifacts are in no danger. They've summoned the abomination. Are you so confident your defenses will hold against his power?
Lady Raven swallowed. If the boy was coming, he'd destroy her wards in a second.
I'll move them at once. May I ask how you learned of his arrival? Our agent in Central alerted us. He's traveling by Dark Portal if he isn't there already. Your time is short, Lady Raven. Do not fail us.
Lady Wolf vanished, and she was alone in her casting chamber.
Kanryu Koda again.
The boy wizard was turning into the bane of her existence. Fortunately, she'd made arrangements for just such an emergency. 5 months was a long time to prepare, and she hadn't spent all her time on interior decorating. When he arrived at the first location, she'd have a surprise waiting for him and his friends. Kanryu stepped out of the light, leaving Lucifer and Cerberus behind. When his vision cleared, he found himself in a chamber very similar to the one in Central. The black disk he was standing on had the exact same rune pattern.
Kanryu, this way.
He spun and found Mr. Kane waving to him from beside the room's only door. Terra and Lynn were with him. Kanryu jogged over. The moment he cleared the dark circle, the power vanished. Though he knew Lucifer couldn't break through the wards, he felt a good deal better now that the portal had closed. He reached Mr. Kane, and the little group hustled through the door.
I trust your trip went smoothly?
I'm not sure smoothly is the word I'd use, but I made it. Kanryu followed Mr. Kane to the nearby elevators with Lynn and Terra bringing up the rear. So you need me to break some wards?
Yes. The team finally tracked down all 5 boxes, but we can't access them.
How strong are the wards? Kanryu asked as they rode the elevator upstairs. I estimate twice as strong as the ones you broke for us last time, Terra said. Kanryu nodded. That shouldn't cause him any problems. Prime wriggled free of his grasp and flew up to look Terra in the eye.
What did you do with the necroplasma?
It's still in my casting chamber, trapped in the spell circle. I'll figure out how best to deal with it once we've collected Mircea's gifts. The doors opened, and they stepped out into the lobby.
I'll leave you with Lynn and Terra. Thanks again for your help, Kanryu.
Mr. Kane started back into the elevator.
Will I have a chance to visit my parents? I don't think so. We need you to get back to school ASAP. Dean Blaine called me after you left. I've made arrangements for an engine to be sent to the academy.
Conry frowned at that. He'd planned to choose the motor himself, and he needed his tools. Tara grabbed his sleeve and pulled him toward the exit, not giving him a chance to complain.
We don't have time to waste on idle chatter. The longer those boxes remain in place, the more opportunity for something to go wrong.
Mr. Kane waved as he was dragged away. Conry freed himself from Tara's grasp and followed her and Lynn in a more dignified posture. They stepped out into the bright morning sun. A tan four-door department sedan idled by the curb. Lynn slipped behind the wheel, and Tara sat beside him, leaving Conry stuck in the back seat. At least with Lynn driving, Conry didn't fear for his life. They pulled out and headed east toward the docks. Conry stared out the window. It was good to be home, even if only for a day.
I've never understood you humans' fondness for your hometowns.
Prime settled on the seat beside him. It's not like demons pine for home every time some wizard summons us.
You live in hell. Who'd be eager to return there?
Good point. Lucifer certainly didn't seem pleased to see you again.
No kidding. We have to figure out how to remove his name from my arm. The Dark Lady's too. Not that I wouldn't mind seeing her again.
Did she leave a lingering enchantment on you?
Prime flew up and looked him all over. Conry was pretty sure the only enchantment she left was in his overactive imagination.
Tara looked back at him. What's this about seeing Lucifer?
He tried to kill me again on my way here, but the wards held. I was just saying I need to get his brand off my arm so he won't be able to tell the moment I enter a portal.
I noticed some fluctuations in the magic while we were waiting for you. That must have been what I detected.
You seem rather calm considering you were almost killed by the devil.
Yeah, well, I wasn't anywhere near this calm the first time. So do you want me to do a proper breaking or just use Dispel?
Dispel, Tara answered at once. I want every bit of magic in the vicinity wiped out.
I chanted the spell 5 times before releasing it once and negated every spell within 60 yards. Will that be enough?
She stared at him for a moment.
That should do it.
She turned back around, muttering, but he couldn't make out what she said. Half an hour later, Lynn pulled in beside a chain-link fence with a door in it. Beyond the fence was a flat expanse of concrete with a gully running through it.
Conryu said, "Reveal."
The culvert at the end of the gully lit up. Maybe that was the wrong way to describe the inky black lines running everywhere, but that was how he thought of it.
I take it the box is down there?
Yes. Mircea left it on a living pedestal along with a bunch of zombies to guard it. Tara opened her door and climbed out. Conryu and Lynn joined her with Prime bringing up the rear.
Speaking of the zombies, Lynn said, I spoke to my contacts at the morgue. They were all killed by a single stab wound to the chest. Missing persons is trying to match them to any outstanding cases.
They must have been Mircea's sacrifices. Tara shook her head and led the way over to the culvert. They stopped well back, and Conryu eyed the dark opening. It certainly looked like a place you'd hide a dark magic artifact.
Shall I get on with it?
Please, hurl your spell as deep into the culvert as you can. Don't hold back, as we may not have a second chance.
Don't hold back. There was something he didn't hear very often.
Conryu crossed his wrists and fingers and began the chant. When he hit 5 repetitions, and the dark sphere was as big as a pumpkin, he hurled it at the opening. Seconds later, a wash of dark magic shot out of the culvert, dissipating 5 feet from them. The wards were gone, and he was about to ask where they were headed next when a flash of power burst from the opening. Shrill screams came from the culvert, followed a moment later by a pair of black-winged demons just like the ones that had tried to attack him last summer. The demons flew into the air and spat dark energy at Tara. She hurled flames and the 2 energies negated each other. Conryu cast Cloak of Darkness, and dark magic covered both himself and Prime. Lynn drew his pistol and put half a clip into the rightmost demon. If the creature felt the bullets, it gave no sign, though it did turn to look at Lynn. It opened its fang-filled mouth. Conryu crossed his fingers and raised a hand. The moment dark energy shot from the demon's mouth, he shouted, "Break!"
A sphere of dark energy streaked from his hand and negated the blast.
Thanks.
Lin put his gun away and turned towards Kanryu.
What can I do?
Not a thing, Prime said. Only magic can hurt demons.
Lin looked hopefully at Kanryu.
Sorry, Sarge. They don't teach offensive spells to first-year students.
Terra was busy exchanging blasts with the first demon, leaving the second to focus on him and Lin. Kanryu negated another attack. At least the demon hadn't gotten it in its head to fly down and tear them apart.
Prime, how do we stop them?
You could banish them. I have the spell here.
Prime started to flip to the proper page.
The spell Mrs. Umbra had used took half a minute to cast, and he hadn't even recognized a quarter of the words she used. No way he could memorize and cast such a complex spell under these circumstances.
That's no good. All I really need is to make them stop attacking.
They ran from another blast. The concrete steamed where the dark energy touched it.
Try commanding them, Prime said. A powerful dark wizard can sometimes dominate a demon if they focus all their will on it.
Your will makes the magic happen, not the words or gestures,
Kanryu muttered. That's what Mrs. Umbra had said. It was time to test that theory. He focused his mind on the demons and having them cease attacking.
Stop!
He shouted in Infernal. Both demons shuddered and twitched, but their mouths shut, and they stopped breathing those dark blasts. Terra ran over to join them.
Don't break your concentration. I'll open a portal, and then you order them through.
Terra moved a little ways away and chanted an unfamiliar spell. A black ring appeared and slowly filled in until it became a disk. The demons saw it and struggled harder. Kanryu grit his teeth.
Be still.
The demons quieted again.
Okay, Kanryu, order them through.
He pictured the demons flying through the portal.
Go to hell.
The demons plunged down out of the sky and vanished through the portal. The instant they vanished, Terra spoke a word, and the gate closed. Kanryu fell to his knees, the mother of all headaches pounding behind his eyes. Terra stared for a moment as Kanryu knelt and grasped his head. She knew enough about the academy curriculum to know they didn't teach freshmen how to control demons. In fact, she was fairly certain that was a third-year subject. He'd done it with nothing but sheer force of will and raw magical power. Absolutely stunning. Unfortunately for him, Kanryu was now paying the price. Wizards used spells for a reason, and one of them was to avoid a backlash from channeling too much unrefined energy. The fact that he used chaotic dark magic made it even worse. On the plus side, they were all still alive because of him. If he hadn't been here, Terra doubted she'd have defeated both demons on her own.
You okay?
Kanryu looked at her with bloodshot eyes.
Sure. You don't have any aspirin, do you?
I have a horrible headache.
Sorry.
If it's any consolation, it wouldn't have helped anyway. Your headache is from magical backlash. Only time or proper application of light magic will make it go away.
I don't suppose you know how to apply it?
Nope. All I know are the basics of light magic. Terra shook her head. We should have brought Shizuku. She'd have fixed you up in a blink.
I'll survive either way. If you don't need me, I'm going to sit in the car.
No problem. I'll collect the box and we'll get out of here. She headed for the culvert, and Lin took a step to follow. Terra shook her head and mouthed, "Stay with him." He turned back to help Kanryu to his feet. The two of them started for the car, and Terra put them out of her mind. Her spell didn't reveal any lingering magic, but that didn't mean she was in the clear. The moment she let her guard down was the moment she might die. At the mouth of the culvert, she conjured a trio of flame orbs. She sent one to fly ahead of her and kept the others by her side. The walk to the rear of the culvert took only seconds. Where the fleshy mound had once sat there was nothing but a rotten, misshapen heap of stinking gobbets of flesh. Terra devoutly hoped the box wasn't buried in the mess. She narrowed her eyes and looked closer. There wasn't so much as a hint of magic to be found. As powerful as Kanryu's spell was, it should still have spared the contents of the box. If she couldn't detect anything... No, no, no. Scream, winds from beyond, gale gust.
She conjured a focused blast of wind that sent goblets of flesh flying everywhere. No box.
Damn it!
Somehow Mircea had moved it to a new hiding place. That begged the question of how she managed it, and more to the point, how did she know she needed to? Tara left the culvert and stalked over to the car. Conryu was lying down in the back, his arm over his eyes.
Where is it? Lynn asked.
Gone.
Gone? Where?
Damned if I know. Let's head to the next location. I need to check something. She craned her neck to look in the back seat. How you holding up? Conryu lowered his arm.
I'm better. Thanks. So did I half-melt my brain for nothing?
I wouldn't say for nothing. We would have had to deal with that trap at some point, but we didn't recover the box. It's been relocated.
For the life of me, I can't figure how she did it.
Maybe she moved it through a dark portal. Mrs. Umbra's had me and Prime working on that, so if we're separated, I can call him to my side.
Tara nodded.
Maybe. The problem is the clues that led us to these hiding places made no mention of backups. I suspect Mircea didn't tell her thugs. Wise move on her part.
Conryu sat up, groaned, and lay back down.
So what now? You need me to clear those other locations?
Afraid so, but first I'm going to look and see if the box is still there and your dispel triggered its disappearance, or if it's already gone. We might be able to work around the former, but if it's the latter, we're screwed.
Conryu shuffled through the doors and down to the elevators. Midnight had come and gone, and they'd finally made it back to the Department of Magic. He'd dispelled all the wards and traps, helped banish 5 more demons, and convinced Lynn and Tara to buy him 3 slices of Giovanni's pizza. That had easily been the highlight of the trip. Though Tara insisted the work he'd done was important, and he might even believe it after 10 hours sleep, right now it felt like he wasted the day. The whole point of this mission was to recover those stupid boxes, and there'd been no sign of them. No one would even tell him why they were so important. Worse, at least for Conryu, if Tara and Lynn somehow found them again, he'd probably have to come back to repeat the process.
Jesus, Conryu, you look horrible.
He glanced up to find Mr. Kane standing beside the elevator. He had a key that appeared to be made out of crystal and the mate to Malice's.
It's been a long day. If I never see another flying demon, it'll be too soon.
Mr. Kane looked to Tara.
Boxes?
No sign of them, Chief. Mircea must have known we were coming and relocated them. Mr. Kane pressed his palms to his forehead, and Conry wasn't sure if he wanted to scream or cry.
So we're back to square one.
Actually, we're in worse shape than before, as we now have no clue where to resume our search.
Everyone turns to glare at Lynn, which made Conryu smile. It was always a nice feeling not to be the one in trouble.
I'm sure you guys will sort it all out. I either need to get back or find somewhere to sleep.
Conryu yawned for emphasis.
Right. Mr. Kane pressed the call button. You have classes tomorrow.
Today. In about 7 hours, as a matter of fact.
I may take a sick day.
Don't do that. Mr. Kane stepped into the elevator, and Conryu followed. They started down to the basement.
Anything out of the ordinary may attract unwanted attention.
Me falling asleep in class would be out of the ordinary, and if I had to cast a spell, I might faint. I'll just put it down to food poisoning or something.
They left the elevator and entered the portal chamber. Mr. Kane touched the edge of the circle with the crystal key and turned it black.
Do what you think is best. And thanks again for your help.
Conryu took a step toward the portal, then turned back.
Be sure they send a full set of tools with the engine. I'm going to have to tear it all the way down.
Mr. Kane gave him a thumbs up, and he stepped into the portal. Back at school. Conryu staggered into his room around 4 in the morning. He couldn't even remember the ride through hell beyond Cerberus's worried whining. Kelsey's grandmother may have made some vague threat, but he was so tired he just ignored her. The train wasn't ready when he arrived, so he ended up sitting around by the warehouse for 3 hours. All in all, he'd had better days.
At least you survived.
Prime flew over to his desk and settled in his usual spot. Considering how much he felt like a zombie, he wasn't sure he had survived. He collapsed on the bed, not even bothering to undress. Sometime later,